You are now listening to the Life is Not Complicated, You Are Strong Opinions podcast with mentor, role model, proven philanthropist, and best-selling author, your host, Carlos Wallace.
All right, I'm with you on the Life is Not Complicated, You Are Strong Opinions podcast. And I got a very, very, very special guest with me today. The lady that has been responsible for keeping me out of tax trouble for the last 25 years, Missy Franklin.
Hello, Carlos. It's a pleasure to be able to sit here with you.
Thank you. Thank you. Hey, innovators, thought leaders, decision makers, and game changers. You fit all of them.
Thank you.
So tell my listeners a little bit about yourself.
My name is Missy. I'm a mother, a grandmother, a friend to many people, and I'm just a down-to-earth, everyday kind of person.
She ain't telling it all, but hopefully I'll pull it out of her during this interview, and down-to-earth. So I know you're a business owner, and so share with them a little bit about your business, and then we'll go more into it.
Okay, I have a financial services business that I specialize in tax preparation and auditing services for individuals and small businesses. We've been in business now for about 22 years on our own. I started out with H&R Block after going through college and doing some other things, and life kind of guided me into taxes.
So have you always known that this is what you wanted to do?
No, not at all.
So you didn't like numbers growing up?
I always loved math. Okay. I always loved math. But I was actually pre-med in college, and I was hit by a drunk driver.
Oh, man.
I was getting ready to go off to Baylor and go to school and become a doctor. And I was hit by a drunk driver. And I went to my doctor, and my doctor said, well, I can't let you get into medicine. He said, it's going to be too much on you. Your back can't handle it. Your body's not going to be able to do that now. You're going to have to find something else. So I decided to, I'm like, okay, well, I have math. I said, let me try teaching. I went and did student teaching. I did elementary. They had too much energy. I did middle school. They were dead. I did high school, and I went and I did my student teaching with my favorite teacher. She was my math and Spanish teacher in high school. Love, love, love this woman. And we were sitting in the classroom, and the kids had become so disrespectful. The bell had rung. She said, okay, class, let's get ready. We're getting ready to learn. Let's get ready to learn. And they were turned around like they were outside at lunch, and they were all talking. I grabbed the big book on the desk, and I stood up, and I slammed it down the desk. I said, oh, Lord, I just saw those jailhouse doors closed. I said, I'm getting ready to go and change my major.
You saw the jailhouse doors closed.
Jailhouse doors were closing.
Yeah, it's a little different from when we grew up. The kids, now, Missy's from East Texas also, so our upbringing was very similar. And it's just the respect factor is different.
No respect whatsoever.
Yeah, it's amazing.
This was 25 years ago. It's
right.
Even worse now.
Worse now. Yeah, it's crazy. Teachers just don't get enough, man. No, they don't give enough respect, enough pay, enough time off.
And used to, you know, when we were in school, the teachers, you could tell it was because they loved what they did.
Right, yeah.
The money was not an issue, but now money is an issue.
Absolutely.
And they just can't provide for their families off of what they're making.
Yeah, and I say that in Houston specifically, because, you know, several school districts that's very close, you know, and the teachers very seldom stay in one place any amount of time.
It's about the money. They have to follow the money.
So, yeah, if they're in one district and then another one offer a $1,500 raise, they run to that
right.
one. And then if another one, $1,000. Whereas we grew up with the same teachers, K through 12.
I had some of the same teachers that my mom and dad had.
Right, right, yeah.
It was a lifelong event.
Yeah, it wasn't about the money. It was you know, sowing seeds in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's just a totally different ball game now.
Yes.
But it's sad that the money does have such an effect on things. I say it all the time. Money is what ruins so many things.
Mm-hmm.
So many high school sports. You know, marriages,
right.
You know, I'm sure you've seen your fair share.
Oh, yes.
So what are some of your greatest challenges in life?
learning to accept people just for face value. Because I've always been the type that I would give trust up front. And then once they break that trust, then they can never go back and repair that. So I'm learning to just kind of accept people. Okay, this is just who they are, what they do, and just leave it at that and not take it personal.
Right. I always say trust is like a, you see people scale down a mountain and they'll put the stake up top and then they'll let out enough cable, make sure it's sturdy. You know, they go a few more feet and they still make sure it's sturdy. To me, that's how trust is. You know, they don't just put their stake in the ground and jump 200-300 feet because they and say, well, maybe it's sturdy up there. I don't know. But sometimes we do that with trust. We jump 200-300 feet with the hopes that it's going to anchor. And sometimes it doesn't. You know, so I'm that way about trust. I'm a few feet. I'm going to see how much I can trust you. Then I'll give you a few more feet. And before you know it, we build up a lifelong friendship. But as you know, a lot of my friends have been my friends for over 40 years.
Right.
You know, and I'm just 48.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we grew up together. And even when we were apart, as far as different paths, careers, whatnot, we still kept in touch. Mm-hmm. And the same loyalty and the trust is still there from many, many, many years, you know. And it's hard to find that anymore, you know, especially when people perceive you to be successful or,
To them, it's about what can I benefit out of being in this relationship with this person.
Yeah, and then they want to know what they can get. And so you have to be, it makes you leery of everybody after that, you know. So, and it's not a space I like being in, but it's, you know, it is what it is. So I know you're a big time sports fan, and on the high school level anyway, you know, you're three girls. One of them was a phenomenal basketball player for sure. So where did she get that?
Well, I played basketball until I got pregnant with her.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
Things
so
had
she
to change.
She owe you some triple doubles.
Right. Right. It wasn't like I was going to be able to go out and continue to my life. I had somebody else's life that was in my hands. So I had to be more focused. Even though I was already focused in the classroom, that was my primary focus. Because it wasn't, you know, I couldn't just put that responsibility off on my parents or my grandparents because that's who raised me.
Right.
So I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to have to make some changes.
Yeah, well, they didn't let us do that back then.
No.
So you made it, you're going to raise it.
You sure? Yeah,
it was totally different. And do you share
our
old school experiences?
All the time, because I'm a firm believer if you don't know your history, you're doomed to repeat it.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to instill in my girls, because I have four girls.
Mm-hmm. I said four.
I had to instill in them, like, look, these are the pathways that I took. And so you're going to come to a fork in the road, and it's going to be your decision. But I want to make sure that you know that the road you're going on has been paved by me.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to know you don't have to follow in my footsteps, but you want to make sure that you own your decisions that you do make in life.
And, of course, even with that, they still sometimes make their own decisions.
Ooh, what you talking?
You just kind of let them go on out there?
Yeah, I have a granddaughter out of the package. It's like I'm mama all over again.
A brilliant granddaughter. But yeah, you see them headed in a direction, and sometimes you just say, you know what, I'm just gonna let them see.
Oh, you have to. You have to. I have one in particular. I've always heard people say that second child is the one that's gonna be that one that's gonna try you. And they're not lying. They're not lying. So you have to let them go out there. Hey, look, I've done my part.
Yeah.
This is your life to live. So you're gonna have to own it.
Yeah, then how long she been trying you since birth?
Actually, it was. When she was born, she came out smiling at the doctor. I said, oh, Lord, this is not going to be good.
It's something ain't right.
And it's been that way ever since.
Man, I tell you, it's a beautiful thing to see them grow and become adults. But like you said, boy, do they add some gray hairs, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, I had to tell my daughter one time. I was saying something to her, and I forget what it was, but she was 18 at the time. And she said, Dad, you don't understand. I said, Allison, you're right, because I ain't never been 18. I was born 40. You know, I was 40 years old when I came here. I've never been where you are. But I think they don't realize how much our lives kind of parallel or, you know, in the same kind of track is theirs, you know. Of course, there's cell phones and all these, you know, this new technology.
Right.
But even with us, there was new technology that our parents didn't have.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Because we came up, we had the new Mad.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember going home and I'm saying, oh, we have this new Mad.
Mm-hmm.
Well, still 1 + 1 is 2.
It's 2 all day long.
No matter how you try to transform it, it's still 2.
It's still 2. But, you know, people talk about the computers. You know, man, don't let a kid on the computer. They're going to do this. I said, when we were kids, they used to tell us, don't watch too much TV, you'll go blind.
When I was a kid, TV went off at 10 o'clock.
All day. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, after 10, you had nothing.
That's right.
And so you had to go to sleep.
And you couldn't watch on Sundays either. Yeah, we couldn't even turn our TV on Sundays, man. It's rough. Yeah, it's rough. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back, and I want to get your opinion on this political climate we're dealing with right now.
Okay.
We'll be right back with you on the Life is Not Complicated. You are a Strong Opinion Podcast. The things students say, like, you know, man, because of this book, I didn't commit suicide. Because of this book, I can now speak in public and come out of my shell. Because of this book, I'm not so worried about what other people say about me, you know, not looking for their validation. That's what touches me.
My favorite chapter was about not letting either your boss, boyfriend, girlfriend, mother, family, anybody get in your way of being successful in whatever it is you want to do.
To purchase Life is Not Complicated, You Are, or the other 99 times, or to download the audio versions, please visit CarlosWallace.com.
Stream Life is Not Complicated, You Are, and the other 99 times. Train your mind to enjoy serenity on Tidal, Spotify, and Audible today.
All right, we're back with you on the Life is Not Complicated. You are a Strong Opinion Podcast. My very special guest, Missy Franklin.
Hello.
So, we got a little roller coaster climate, political climate right now. So, give me your position on what's going on. Did you kind of foresee this?
After the election, I fell asleep. And we were still waiting on California and some of the Western states to come in.
Right.
So when I woke up the next morning, they said that Trump was president. I said, wait a minute, let me go back to sleep.
It's got to be a nightmare.
This can't be happening.
Right.
This cannot be happening. I know people want change and people want things to happen, but I don't think this was what they really wanted.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you have to give people what they want.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that way they can appreciate and build from that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we still have a lot of things that's going on and people that have come out the woodworks that have jumped into the scene.
Right.
But I think this is our wake-up call.
Mm-hmm.
Because in order to have true change, you have to get involved and you have to get out there and participate.
Mm-hmm.
I had so many people that were like, oh, I knew he was going to win anyway. That's why I didn't go vote.
Wow.
That's why he won.
Right, right, right.
Because all the ones that had that fear in them of what he was out there and he was putting into the atmosphere,
mm-hmm.
those people came out and they voted.
They voted, yeah.
And by you staying at home, you know, you're part of the problem.
Mm-hmm. Because surely those people don't outnumber us.
Of course not.
They just out-participated us.
Right,
you know?
Right.
With the new tax laws, like, you know, I know you told me far in advance, you know, Carlos, put money away because you may end up paying in this year. How much did it affect your client base?
Well, just like with you, I did with everybody. I'm like, look, there's some things that are getting ready to come down the pipeline that we're not going to be ready for. So only thing, because the final numbers and everything for his plan that he was putting into action
mm-hmm.
didn't really get put into paper until later in the year.
Mm.
So, you know, it was just kind of like everything was like just a buzz. You mm-hmm. know, this is what might happen. Oh, no, this is going to be the best thing since sliced bread. So I was telling people, look, worst case scenario, if things don't change, you'll have a big refund coming back.
Right, right.
But if things change, you'll be prepared.
You'll be prepared.
So at least 75-85% of the people that I told, they actually did something.
Oh, okay.
And they were positive, they were happy about it.
Mm-hmm. I know I was. I mean, it's and that's why I've you know, I don't look to ever have another CPA, because I'd not just trust you business. I mean, I know you personally. You know, I've known you a long time. And to me, that makes a difference, you know, when you can call, I can call you up and say, hey, I got a question with this. And it's not, well, come by the office or 8 to 5 or, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It makes a big difference. And of course, you've supported me in my endeavors since I started Soul, mm-hmm. you know, sponsor shows. You've sponsored people to come to shows that, you know, that couldn't afford it. Right. And I just want to, again, say thank you for that. Because you've been there in the building of this company.
You know, I've had so much faith in you and just your wisdom, even back years ago at a younger age. Mm-hmm. It was just amazing to me. You know, I had the privilege of meeting your mom, mm-hmm. and I told you that story about your mom. But I mean, just to have somebody that young and that driven mm-hmm. was just amazing to me, because where I grew up, I was the black person in class.
Right, right.
You know, my friends, they were sent out to the remedial classes to go get help and things. Right. I'm like, why am I the only one in here?
Yeah.
And then to finally meet somebody, especially a male somebody that right. was doing positive things for the community and had foresight, was amazing. So I've always seen greatness in you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I know all too well about that only black kid in the class, you know. I shared that story about we had to bring our baby pictures to school in a health class in the sixth grade, and we have to match the, you know, current day you with the baby. Like, and that was points, you know, I forget exactly how it worked. But the joke was, well, we'll get at least one right, because I was the only black in the class.
Right.
You know? And but if we did that now, man, Fox News, CNN, you name it, would be swarming all over the school with it being a racist situation. And that's not racism, you
right.
know. But, yeah, those were the days that built me, you know what I mean?
This just seems like it's a culture of people want to jump on some type of bandwagon.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Instead of looking at what's going on
yep.
and fixing what the underlying
problem.
The
underlying, yeah.
They just want to jump on that right now bandwagon.
I agree.
And I'm going to ride it until the wheels fall off of this one so I can jump onto the next one.
Even if it's wrong, they just want
right?
And I have a problem with those people, but an even worse problem with the people that later find out they were wrong and just don't want to admit they were wrong.
Right.
Just say, hey, man, you know what? I picked the wrong horse for that race.
Right.
You know what I mean? And let bygones be bygones. But for you to hold on to wrong for so long, knowing you're wrong, that's just extremely disappointing, and not to mention immature, you know. But, yeah, it's crazy. So the mass shootings, you know, that's going on now, what do you think about it? And how do you think we can stop it?
I actually think it's a lack of education.
Mm-hmm.
Guns are not the problem.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up with guns. Mm-hmm. I have guns of my own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had a client that's a Republican, diehard Republican,
mm-hmm.
but he loves him some Missy.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were talking one day. I'm like, yeah. I said, as a kid, I just went out and, you know, we just went in the backyard and got bottles and cans and we just shoot them. Like, you have guns? Yeah. Now, you're not a Republican? No, I'm not.
It's hard to be from the country and not have guns, though.
Right.
You
right.
know. But you know what's interesting about that is a lot of people think the line is drawn black and white.
Mm-hmm.
Like, black people would be the ones who want to get rid of guns, and white people, the pro-gunners, were mostly white. That's just not true.
Right.
And like I said, it would be hard-pressed to grow up in the country like we did and not have guns. Now, we didn't have AK-47s and
right.
AR-15s, but...
Because what are you trying to shoot with
yeah, it? You're just going to tear something up. You know, but, you know, at 10, 12 years old, you have shot a squirrel.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And some of us even deer.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, we had guns. I didn't go quail hunting until I was probably almost 30.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I enjoy that more than anything. It's more of a challenge,
okay.
you know. But I think I enjoy that more than any other kind of hunting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. To echo you on the guns, I think, of course, education. That's,
mm-hmm.
To me, that's the answer, period.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I would love to see them just get rid of these, you know, automatic style guns,
mm-hmm.
you know, because what are the purpose in public? And but again, back to education and restoring the self-love in these kids, man. Like, they have so much hate inside. And as you spoke earlier, let's fix the underlying issue.
Right.
Like, why are they so upset? You know, I saw a study the other day that said the majority of the white kids that are doing it is because they lack fathers. That was a common thing. Well, welcome to our world. You know, I had a father, and you, of course, your grandfather. But we know a lot of people that grew up with just a mom, you know.
Right.
And sometimes a mama was worse than a mom and a daddy.
Say that again.
So, yeah, the mama would overcompensate.
Right.
You know, my mom was a railroad wife, which that's as close to being a single mother without being a single mother as you can get, you know, because my dad would be gone sometimes 2 days at a time, sometimes 2 weeks at a time. So there's a lot of events that he missed, you know, basketball game, you name it, you know, because he was working. And so a lot of it would just be my mother by herself. But again, she was one of those overcompensating mamas. Like, she'll whoop you enough for both parents. But, you know, you said the Republican client. I'm sure you probably have many.
Oh, yes.
Know what I mean? Because you have a pretty high-end, if you will, clientele, you know, the guys that make a $300,000, $400,000 and up.
Right.
So, and tax-wise, it probably makes sense for a lot of them to be Republicans, you know, would you say?
Yeah, I can understand that, but because, you know, it's the premise, I think, that they're going by. Because, you know, back in the day, the Republicans wanted to help you keep all your money, and the Democrats wanted to just give money away.
Right, right.
It's really not like that. You know, I think it's an individual choice more so today. Because you might have some type of things that the Republicans say, oh, we want to do this. Well, yeah, I want to do that too. And then I'm sure some Republicans will see some of the things that Democrat people say, and they're like, oh, well, I want to help give to this person here if I see somebody in need. So, you know, the lines have gotten so blurred by people putting these innuendos out there that people are so confused. They don't know what they are.
Yeah, almost like they're forcing us to pick a side.
Right.
You know, I was telling a friend of mine the other day, I was like, man, there's some, I'm a registered Democrat, but because I'm pro-labor, you know, I'm union man, I was organizer. But there are some Republicans that have helped the labor movement as well. And there are some Democrats that may have hurt it. You know what I mean? So it is an individual situation. What people will not do is study, you know, why do I vote for this guy? Instead of why don't I, why would you vote for the guy? Like, quit looking at the negative. I hate political commercials, especially the ones that only talk about the other person. Like, dude, I don't want to hear what you got to say about it. Tell me what you're going to do.
Right.
You know, and but yeah, I don't like how things are going now politically. You know, I mean, when it was clean race, you know, you get on and you talk about what you're going to do. And, you know, even with the Democratic field right now, all they're doing at the debates is talking about the negative past of the other opponent.
And they're just giving the ammunition to, they don't even have to go out and look up anything. All they do is go watch the debate.
And it's, I just remember when it used to be a lot more class.
You know,
and I wish we could get back to that, but I'm afraid we may not.
You know, it's not like they're going out there and talking to the common everyday people and saying, what is it that I can do to help you?
Right.
We don't get any of that.
Right.
It's just, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. It's too much of the I movement instead of we. Because we were built off of we the people.
Wow. That's a good place to take another break right there. We'll be right back with you on the Life is Not Complicated. You are a Strong Opinion Podcast.
Hi, everyone. Liz Faubliss here to let you know about my children's book, You Have a Superpower. It's part of a series of books I've written to empower, to inspire, and to help young girls everywhere realize you have special talents, special gifts that make you an amazing person. I call them superpowers because these extraordinary talents, whether it's math, science, art, sports, or even writing, can help change the way people look at themselves and the world just by watching how confident you are about your extraordinary gifts. It's the perfect book for any young woman who needs a positive reminder that she's smart, gifted, and important. You Have a Superpower is available on Amazon.com. Order yours today and let that special young girl in your life know she can change the world one superpower her power at a time.
All right, we're back with you on Life Is Not Complicated. You are Strong Opinion Podcast. I want to stay on this the political stuff a little more because I want to talk about the effect of immigration, undocumented workers. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but Jose mowing the yard, undocumented guy mowing the yard, paid under the table. Mm-hmm. How much does he affect the tax structure?
I really believe that he affects the tax structure the most because he is being paid under the table. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you have an undocumented worker that's in a factory, they're still taking out Social Security. They're taking out Medicare. A lot of times they're still taking out federal taxes. And as far as Social Security and Medicare, these undocumented workers will never be able to see that. So it's being paid into the system mm-hmm. for other people to use.
What about the factories that don't do that? Like they're not even showing them on the books.
Now, that's a little bit harder because I really think that a lot of them are being showed. It may not be showing under their information.
Okay.
Because I've seen a lot of identity theft, especially with going on with the IRS, because there's been so many people who've been using someone else's social mm-hmm. and reporting that income to under that person's social mm-hmm. when it's actually Jose's cousin Juan.
Right.
So, you know, now that hurts the system.
Well, I've seen, like, say, construction companies. Mm-hmm. A four-person company, you know, the father's the owner, his wife is the bookkeeper, mm-hmm. his son is the crew leader, and the mm-hmm. daughter is the marketing person, mm-hmm. and they build a 75-foot skyscraper.
Okay.
How did their company do that with them four people? If they're going on the corner getting undocumented every day, you know.
Those day laborers?
Day laborers. Mm-hmm. See, those are what I'm talking about. Like, and this guy may have been granted, say, $20 million to build this skyscraper. And he spends
just doesn't seem fair, does it?
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand completely.
And how much that hurts the tax structure, would you say?
I would definitely say that because, you know, people always complain their biggest issue with the immigrants is that they're over here and they're taking jobs from us.
Which is ridiculous, but
those jobs were given to them by somebody who's gotten this $20 million contract.
That's who betrayed you, mm-hmm. not the person that's doing the work. Yeah, the guy that said, "Man, I can get this guy for $5 an hour versus paying you, mm-hmm. you know, labor
you're gonna charge me $25. I'm gonna take this $25 and go to the corner and go get five of you,
yeah,
and come in and get the job done."
Mm-hmm.
So you know, I understand it's a bottom line thing to a lot of people
mm-hmm.
because, you know, the immigrant situation is not something that's just started. This has been going on for years.
For years, right.
And, you know, they've been hired in as maids, nannies, and mm-hmm. things like that. So all that stuff has been on the table.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not until it's out there and in your face and being in the media. I think the media coverage now is so prominent that it's being brought up at your dinner table
consistently.
Now. And so it's in your face. So, you know, now they're saying, oh, we have to do something about this issue. It's always been an issue.
It's already been here, yeah. But I agree. I think the media just blow things over the top more than anything.
And do you think that when the media is doing that, do you think it's actually some type of smokescreen for something else?
You know, I hear people say that. I hear people, they're just trying to distract us because of this and that. And in some ways, yes. Because there are things that happened in the Clinton administration during the Monica Lewinsky thing that we're finding out now. And I said, boy, they were brilliant, you know. So to know that it's been done before, of course, like, you know, obviously it could happen again. It's just that we just have to be more vigilant, you know. If someone tricked you in a way before, they shouldn't be able to trick you in that way again.
Not in the same way.
You know, no. So you just have to be more vigilant. And also there are things that could be in the media or is popular trending, and I just don't pay any attention, you know,
right.
Because it's the immigration. You just beating, as my mom said, you beating a dead horse, like, mm-hmm. you know, and we can build a wall. It doesn't matter. The drugs that the president is talking about and all this illegal activity, they're not walking across the border,
mm-hmm.
you know, planes, trains, tunnels, you know what I mean? They're not walking across the border, so... I think the wall is just more for show. You know, hey, I tried, you know.
How is it that the country that's built upon people coming to the country and being immigrants, how are they trying to be so exclusive now.
Well, I say this a lot. As Americans, we're just very arrogant. You know, we are, man. We're the only people that go to another country and get mad because they don't speak English. Yeah, we're just arrogant. And then there's a certain layer of us that are elitist. You know, they tend to look down on people. And as my mom used to say, boy, you ain't got a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of. Right. Who do you think you are? Mm-hmm. You know, and it make you want to say that to them. Mm-hmm. I see people, you know, talk down on folks. I'm like, dude, I've known you your whole life. You know, you 30 minutes from being poverty stricken yourself.
Right.
And you know, you want to look down on others. But as we know, God can change that course any day.
Any day. That any second.
Any second. And so there are things that are happening, and I think, like you said, they're wake-up calls. Mm-hmm. They make people look in the mirror and say, man, this, I don't know. You know, right. I personally have, I don't want to call them friends, but associates, you know, they were pro-Trump. I mean, hardcore. Mm-hmm. And as the days pass, they're less and less because, and it's not necessarily his policies. As much as his rhetoric is more and more embarrassing.
Yeah.
You know, and like I told guys before, I said, man, let's separate him from being president. Just separate that. Imagine that's your grandfather. You know what I mean? He's 70 plus. You know what I mean? Imagine that's your grandfather doing all those tweets and all that. Like, that's embarrassing.
That's ridiculous. I have never seen or even imagined anything like that in the president's office. You know, that
right.
is supposed to be the highest office of the land, supposed to be held at a certain level mm-hmm. of respect and dignity. And I mean, it's just erased all it.
Right, right. Well, it's disappointing to me because in the fourth grade, I don't know if I ever told you this, I said I was going to be the first black president. And, you know, they asked what you wanted to be. And in fourth grade, I was voted, I think junior historians or something like that, I was voted president. So I said, one day I'm going to be the first black president. If Trump was president or if we had a president then, mm-hmm. with that type of behavior, there's no way I would want to be that.
Right.
And so that's what's upsetting to me, because there may be another kid in the fourth grade mm-hmm. that want to be president, or a girl, a young lady, and say, I'm going to be the first female or whatever. And they see him acting that way and they go, no, I changed my mind.
And what my hope is that that young man or that young woman sees what he's done to that office and say, I want to restore it.
I want to restore it.
I want to bring it back to what it used to be, to the glory days.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, I want to be that person that people are, oh, that's my president.
Mm-hmm.
Because even now with my grandbaby, like, oh, that's President Obama. You know, that's her president.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the person that she's seen. And she was, as he was in office, you know, she grew up seeing him in office. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was a thing to be proud of.
Right.
You know, I know a lot of people don't agree with his policies. And for whatever reason, but everybody has their opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But what you can't do is not knock that he was that president that brought people together.
Yeah, and you can't say he was not class.
Like right.
He was class all the way. It's disappointing, you know, with the stuff we see, the rhetoric, and just, it, like I said, it's embarrassing as an American.
Mm-hmm.
If I travel to other countries, and they laughing at us, you know?
Oh, yeah. Just the butt of the joke.
Right.
And if it wasn't that so much, if we didn't know who he was before he got in there,
mm-hmm.
I think that was the slap in the face.
Yeah, yeah.
The things that you found out about this man before he was even voted into office, and people still
voted for him.
Oh, well, that was just something in the past.
No. He ain't been here for 70 years for nothing. You know what I mean? He is who he is. It's just that, like I said, it's bizarre. You know, I want us to be able to restore class.
Mm-hmm.
But just in our lifetime, I've never seen sports teams not want to visit. I've never seen anyone not want to take advantage of an opportunity to visit the White House.
Right.
And now we have people say, nah, we good. That's them. Mm-mm. You know, I had the opportunity to meet President Bush. Mm-hmm. I was in Silver Spring, Maryland, an organizing school. And a Secret Serviceman came over to our class. It was 10, 12 of us. And he says, hey, President Bush want to meet you guys later. He's going to be in the Democratic rooms with some of the senators and da-da-da. And he would like some of the organizers come down, you know, just take pictures. And I wouldn't go. I said, no, I'm going to pass. And when I tell friends about it, they go, because the other guys thought I was crazy. They was like, man, you going to pass up opportunity? I said, yeah, you know. But my thing was, I didn't agree with him. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so I channeled my grandfather and said, if I don't have anything nice, just why even go? Yeah. And I didn't want to go just for photo op, you mm-hmm. know. But if I have the chance to meet a president or anyone like that, I'm going to have some questions, you know, like right. Or some things that I would like to say without being disrespectful. And in 2007, when I don't think I could have done that. So I chose not to go. And I think it was the right thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I really think it was the right thing. But again, I've never seen a time where people passed up the opportunity to go to the White House.
Whole teams,
you know. And we don't even know about how many people that were probably offered the Presidential Medal of Honor, and they said, no, that's okay.
It doesn't even mean the same anymore.
Yeah, I was talking to a friend of mine in Houston. Her son or daughter, one made like the highest level of Boy Scout or Girl Scout, and you get a certificate signed by the president, and she was upset because it was President Trump.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was like, wow, that's, you know, because you wait forever as a scout to get to that level, you know. I said, man, that's disappointing. All right, we're going to move on, man. So I know you're a reader. Who are some of your favorite authors and why? Like,
when I was younger, I loved reading. I told you a story about the pea field, mm-hmm, where mm-hmm. as a child, we were taken out to the pea patch.
Yeah.
And I don't think I was probably about six or seven. Mm-hmm. And we were taken out to the pea patch early in the morning, about 6 a.m. And I'd already made up my mind what I was going to do with my money, because I was going to make some big money that day. I had my one row, and I had a lady beside me, and she straddled one row, had one on her left and one on the right, and she was just picking. And I'm like, I'm just going to stick to my one row. I don't need that much money. Right. I just need this money I'm going to get.
She's trying to buy a house.
Got up there at lunchtime when the day was over with and cashed in about 67 cents. So I'm like, okay, this is what my grandpa was trying to teach me. I need to work smarter, not harder. Right. Okay, I'm going home reading books. So mm-hmm. I would read everything I can get my hands on. I was reading. Mm-hmm. So for me, I really didn't have a favorite. I liked Charles Dickens mm-hmm. as a child, but I can't really just pull someone out the air that I just really, really love. Mm-hmm. Now, my favorite author today is this author named Carlos Wallace.
Oh, thank you.
Because I remember as he was writing Life's Not Complicated,
yeah.
You Are,
yeah.
He would send me just some little segments from the chapters, and I'm like, oh, God, I can't keep reading this. And I mean, it was just like, oh, he's telling our stories.
Yeah.
And he's putting his words into our words, and it was just wonderful. So that's who I like now.
You know, like yourself, I liked Alex Haley, and then I have my own reasons why I went away, and I'll tell you that off air. But other than him, I didn't really have a favorite author. You know, I did like reading, especially in the Navy, out to sea. You know, you have a lot of downtime. So, just yesterday, I got the question from an old teacher. When you were in school and you were writing all those essays that we used to love and this, that, did you ever think you would write a book? And I said, absolutely not. That just was not on my bucket list. And, you know, one led to another, now working on the third, and Liz has already given me the title of number four.
Okay, so, okay.
And I said I was going to stop. Each one was going to be the last one. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, the first one, I said, yeah, that's it. No. And then I said, you know what, number three is it. And she said, yeah, I got the title for number four already.
So you might just keep rolling with the flow.
Yeah, well, I just always said I never want to write what I didn't think to say. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to write just to write, right. You know. And I want my words to make a difference, you know, whether it be in an individual, whether it be in mass, you know. I want it to be a game changer, mm-hmm. so to speak, you know. And thus far it has, you know, in schools, you know, a different way of teaching, empowerment groups, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm getting ready to start this organization it's an organization in New York. They're going to incorporate my book, and I go in and speak to these young men every week about being men. You know, just the responsibilities of being a man.
Because that conversation really needs to be had.
It needs to be had. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's and see, I was in top teens when we were kids, and mm-hmm. we went to those classes. You know, mm-hmm. about how, you know, when you walk into a movie theater, do you walk in front of your girlfriend or behind her? Mm-hmm. You know, you walk in front in case there's a trip hazard. You know, just mm-hmm. things like that. And I still remember. You know, but yeah, that's it's just not happening a lot today. So
it's funny you said that. Last year I went out with an old friend of mine, mm-hmm. and so we went to a Dallas Cowboys game. And so after the game, you know, we had to get back over to our shuttle. So you have to walk across the street, and you're walking down the sidewalk to go over to meet. Well, I was walking on the side by next to the road.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just walking along and having a conversation. No. Next thing I know, he grabs me, he throws me. I'm like, what the? Oh, what?
Yeah. Yeah, no.
But it's just, you just don't find that.
That's right. Yeah.
Because they're not having it. They're not being taught that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a conversation that's being had. So it's something that needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, women have, I was raised in a house full of women, and mm-hmm. then I had my grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he was that male figure. But for the day to day, I was raised by women.
Right.
So, you know, you're not saying, they're not saying, oh, you need to let the man do this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, by the time I go over there and find a man to do this, then I'm just going to go ahead and do it myself. You know, it's that kind of thing. So I applaud you for doing that, because that's something that needs to happen.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's I don't even look at it as the biggest challenge, you know. It's a school in Stone Mountain, Georgia, an all-white Catholic school. They use my book. And the first time they wanted me to come out and speak with them about social justice, I looked at that as a big challenge. You know? And you know what? When I got there, it was just a common conversation, you know, because they had tons of questions. You know, mm-hmm. it was just a lot about Black culture that they just had no clue. And fair enough, you know what I mean? And they just had a lot of questions, just sometimes what we would consider just simple questions.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been 3 years now, and it's more fun each time I go. You know, I really enjoy it. So what are some of the daily routines that you go through that led you to your success?
Well, I try to stay grounded.
That was my next question. What keeps you so grounded?
Oh,
but go
okay.
ahead. No.
That strong female background that I had growing up as a child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my grandmother, she was Church of God in Christ, Kojic.
Of course.
So, you know, we did a lot of church.
Whole lot of church.
And I remember as a kid, she would be praying all the time, and I'd be like, Mama, why are you always on your knees praying?
But you ain't got through to him yet.
As an adult, I realized she was praying for me.
Yeah, you get it.
Because some of the things that I've gone through, I'm like, it wasn't nothing but God. That was that prayer that Mama was in there on that floor.
Right.
She was in there praying because she knew this was coming.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's just being aware of there's something out there bigger than me.
Mm-hmm.
And having good positive people around you,
mm-hmm.
because you know there's so much negativity going on day in and day out, and you probably have some in your household.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You know you need to have positive people around you, people that are going to speak life in and through and for you.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes the people that discourage you the most are the ones closest to you.
Right.
I say it all the time. The only people that have ever told me what I can't do. Mm-hmm. Well, the ones I knew.
Right.
It's never been a stranger walk up and say, you can't do that.
Some of my biggest decisions have happened behind somebody that said I couldn't do something.
That's right.
Those are some of my big... When somebody tells me I can't, I'm like, let me show you I can.
They make you work that hard. But see, and I'm the same way. As you know, like, when you tell me something I can't do, I'm making it... That's my mission to prove you mm-hmm. wrong. But there are other people, when they're told they can't do it, they abort it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they feel, oh, well, you told me I can't do it, and they stop. And that's why that's disappointing to me. Like, I tell people, don't let others talk you out of your dream.
Mm-hmm.
You know, keep fighting for your dream. It ain't nothing but time, and you got a lot of it. Mm-hmm. And if you expire before you get there, oh well, but you died trying.
Right.
You know.
At least you were trying.
That's right.
When I was pregnant in high school, my science teacher, he told the class, he's like, oh, she's not coming back. So I'm like, oh. So one of my friends in the class, all white class other than me, they called me up and they told me, said, we said, the teacher said you're not coming back. I'm like, who said that? Like, he said you had the baby, so you're just going to drop out of school.
Wow.
I was like, well, let me show you something.
Wow.
So that year I came back, I think I got the science award that year, had the highest average in his class. And so when I came and I turned my paper in after coming back from being on maternity leave, I said, hi, I'm back.
I'm back. Now, of course, you know, we have negative people around us, and we go through moments that we're down, it's dark. How do you get through your darkest moments?
Just remember my grandmama and my grandfather.
That, you know that's my answer. Because while we do go through things, they went through a lot worse.
Oh, yeah. My grandmama, she used to tell me, she's like, you know, you would have those times where people would talk about you because... For the most part in school, I didn't get talked about by the white people. It was the black people.
Yeah.
Oh, she's this and she's that. Yeah. She's a nerd. You know, those kind of things.
Right.
And so my grandma would tell me, she's like, they talked about Jesus Christ. That's the greatest man that ever walked the face of earth. Who are you?
Right.
That you can't take a little something.
That's right.
Because if they talking about you, they leaving somebody else alone.
Right.
So I tell people all the time, put it on me. I can take it.
Because
that way they're going to leave you alone.
Yeah. Yeah. And that leads me to this. On your journey to success and where you are now, I know there's people you had to separate from and leave behind, and because everybody is not meant to go.
Right.
Was it hard for you to do that, and how were you able to do it?
I really credit that to my upbringing in school, because I had already been separated, and it just kind of came natural. You know, I know in order to be a good leader, I had to be a good follower. So I've had great people in front of me. I've had some not so good people in front of me. And I'm like, okay, well, now I know it's time for me to step to the side here and now take the lead for myself. So, you know, it was just that, you know, being separated from my classmates and things and knowing that it's all right.
Right.
It's going to be okay because I'm getting this here and I'm going to come back and I'm going to teach you.
Okay.
I'm going to bring this back to you.
Okay.
So I'm not doing this just for myself. I'm doing it to better all of us.
Right.
Because in college, I tutored. In high school, I tutored. And so I just kind of used that as a springboard to go ahead and go on into business.
To keep doing it. Speaking of tutoring, do you mentor much now?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I love mentoring young girls. And you have to build a foundation. So, you know, you have to talk to them. We had an organization called Girls Enrichment Program, where I worked with another lady, and we kind of targeted girls that were middle school and up through high school, because it's very important that age range. Because being in sports with my girls, we would have so many girls coming up in elementary. By the time they got to middle school, they kind of faded away. We're like, oh, wait a minute, where'd all these girls go to?
Right.
But you know, they get enriched in boys and things like that. So I would tell girls, I'm like, get you a mirror.
Yeah.
And the first thing you do when you get out the bed, you say, baby, you are the finest thing out there walking.
Yeah.
You finer than wine.
Yeah.
I drink your bath water. You need to put all those things out there. So when you hear it from that guy,
it's not a distraction.
It's not even gonna faze you.
Yeah.
Like, I know, thank you.
Right,
and
yeah.
Keep it moving.
Uh-huh.
So you know you have to do that for girls. Because I used to tell my trainer, I'm like, girl, I've always been a size 2. So now that I lost weight, I don't know what the heck they looking at. I've always been a size 2. Even though I wasn't a size 2. But that's how my grandmother was. Because my grandmother always told me, she's like, Your big mama was a big woman, and you supposed to be a big woman too. Cause I don't nothing want a bone but a dog.
But a dog.
You gonna be a big woman. Here, take these two sandwiches.
And he gonna bury it.
So it was just that kind of upbringing, you know, having those positive people that always spoke life into you.
Yeah.
And always told you, you know, you are better than any situation that
Correct.
You are in or can go through.
That is so true.
And so that's what we tried to do to the girls. We would tell them, you know, do these things. And I promise you, on the other side,
you'll be all right.
You'll be okay.
Wow. So with that, who would you say is your greatest inspiration?
I would have to say my grandfather.
Yeah.
My grandfather. He was very hardworking, a man of very, very few words. But when he spoke, we called him E.F. Hutton.
Yeah.
Because when E.F. Hutton speaks, everybody listens. I remember as a kid, he would come to my grandmother's house, which was, well, she was my great-great-grandmother, and it was his grandmother. Mm-hmm. And so he would come down, and she would have him something fixed for dinner. So he would eat, and then the news would come on. He's like, y'all hush, 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 hush. So my uncle and I, we were the same age. And so I would tell him, we would look at each other, and we like, soon as we get grown, we ain't gonna hush. We just wait. Just wait. We're gonna get grown. So when my grandfather got sick, he moved in with me. Uh-huh. And so we were all sitting and we were watching TV. And the news came on. My grandfather said, y'all hush, 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 hush. The whole room fell silent. And my uncle and I, we looked at each other and we were thinking the exact same thing. We wasn't supposed to hush. We grown.
Yeah, shoot. You ain't never grown when you're around now.
Oh, no.
Nah, you 40 years old. You still my baby. Man. Well, I'm going to wrap it up, but I got to hit you with this question. I ask everybody this. If you could go back in history of this country and change, where would you go? What would you change and why?
I'm a rebel by heart. I always tell people that I would be out there with Malcolm. Well, I'll be out there with Martin up until they threw their rock. Then I'm finna get on the phone and I'm finna call Malcolm. Malcolm, they've lost their mind. I would want to be there in that moment because I feel like that was such a pivotal time. This past, just a few weeks ago, we got the opportunity to go to Atlanta. And on our trip, we went on the MLK tour. And it was eye-opening because being from the South and from Texas and being in a predominantly white school. I knew none of that. And I'm like, even the books that I read from that school didn't tell me that. And I'm like, oh my God, it's just so amazing. So I would want to be in that era. I want to be in that time. I want to be there and kind of, you know, just be walking side by side and holding their hands because I would want to kind of bring them together because it was so divisive.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
And even though they were trying to get to the same goal,
fighting about how they gonna get there.
Instead of just hopping on the bus and going together.
Yeah.
So I would want to be during that time.
Okay. I'm gonna say this before we go, but did you have an opportunity to go to President Carter's library when you were
no,
there?
No, I didn't.
You missed an amazing...
I'm going back. I'm gonna go back, trust me.
...history lesson. JFK is credited for doing a lot for black people in America. And I can't say, because I wasn't alive. You know, I can only go by what people say. But in my opinion, he was just right place, right time, so to speak. Eloquent speaker, you know. And then Bill Clinton get a lot of credit. But I think people overlook all of the things that Jimmy Carter. There's a story when you watch his video, and he was saying how and they have footage of him sitting on the curb eating watermelon with black kids. And he was saying, he was telling how his father was so racist. You know, what are you doing out there with them little N-words? But his mother was the exact opposite. And so his father passed away early in his life. And he said it was probably good that it happened because he think as he got older, he may not have spoken to him. Because he followed the path of his mother. She loved everybody. And that's where that comes from. But I want to say he was either late teens or early 20s when his father died. You know, he went away to the Navy and so forth and so on. But I think the work he did, I didn't know until I visited his library, all the stuff that he did for blacks, you know, before his presidency and during.
And, you know, I think I've read some stories about him, and his upbringing was so similar to blacks.
That's correct. He grew up with black kids.
So, he was able to better relate. And so he knew what the country needed.
That's
he knew
right.
what people needed.
Yeah, he was just an old country boy, you know. But, yeah, he grew up. And like I said, you'll see footage of him. It's not just him telling the story. You'll see footage, you know, in pictures when he was 6, 7 years old. And back then, that was unheard of.
Oh, yeah.
You know. So yeah, it really, not that I've ever disliked him, but it made me like him that much more, you know. But yeah, when you go back to Atlanta, make sure you do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's been a pleasure having you on.
It's been my honor.
Thank you so much.
For you. This has been wonderful.
Thank you so much. And we'll catch you guys next week on the Life Is Not Complicated, You Are a Strong Opinion podcast.